Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Barry. Sorry about that.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I think we had a little technical problem there. I apologize. But I was just saying that right before I brought you on, that right now there doesn't seem to be any indication of any wave in the country. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. You know, what exactly is happening in the United States. So we're going to talk about a lot of that. But before we do, congratulations on your Yankees. They're doing absolutely great. And on this day in 1935, Babe Ruth hit his last home run, number 714. So I picked a good day to chat with you, Barry.
Right. And as you know, he actually started the day with 711. And he hit three home runs, and then that was his farewell.
That's exactly right. That he was playing with the Boston Braves. He was not with the Yankees that last season. But he hit three, and then he said goodbye. And then, of course, he died, I think it was 13 years later. He died of cancer. So the great Babe Ruth hit number 714 on this day. Well, let's talk a little politics. There's a lot going on the political scene out there. And why don't we begin with all of the primaries so far? There have been quite a few primaries. And how would you analyze the primary so far for both the Democrats and the Republicans, Barry?
Well, of course, the media with the mainstream, so-called mainstream media, the liberal media has a bias. So they're looking at everything through their rose-colored glasses. And a couple of facts are facts. There's a lot of Democratic women candidates this year,
mm-hmm.
and many of them are winning the primaries, including in Texas. That they win the primaries doesn't mean they're going to win a general election.
Right.
We did see the first black woman nominee in the state of Georgia for governor, and that's good that happened, but it's not clear at all that she can win the election, because many of these women candidates are quite far to the left
mm-hmm.
of the political center, and they're part of the larger group which is pulling the Democratic Party to the left, or trying to, and creating a real problem for them. Now, of course, the Republicans have their own splits and divisions, which are creating problems for them. But the fact remains is that so far the primaries have brought generally good news for the Republicans, especially in a place like West Virginia, where a guy who supposedly had been convicted of a felony and served
mm-hmm.
time in prison was almost on his way to win the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate. President Trump stepped in. The voters listened to him, and they chose the Attorney General, Patrick Morrisey, who trails in an early poll, but who will be a very competitive candidate against Joe Manchin, who
mm-hmm.
is the most conservative Democrat in the Senate, along
with
Heidi Heitkamp. But generally speaking, the primaries are picking strong candidates for both parties. But as you point out, and as Newt Gingrich wrote on today and spoke on Fox News, there is no evidence of a blue wave, because two things are true. Democrats, especially highly partisan Democrats, are aroused and are coming to the polls. They don't like Donald Trump, and that's helping motivate them. But what people aren't reporting, and is the media isn't reporting, and Texas is a classic example, is the Republicans are turning out. In fact, mm-hmm. if you look at the results, as you have already pointed out to me in private, of the Senate and gubernatorial primary contest, there were a lot more Republicans voting
That's
than Democrats.
Right.
And it's not at all clear that that there's any wave of either kind. I wrote a piece, as you know,
mm-hmm.
a few days ago, said, what if there's no wave?
Right,
what
exactly.
What would that look like?
Right.
And I think
that... Well, I guess that'd be kind of a status quo, wouldn't it? I mean, things would be about the same, maybe pick up a few seats in the Senate, and that's about it.
Well, I describe that as the Democrats would pick up seats in the House but not take
mm-hmm.
control.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans would pick up two or three, maybe even four seats in the Senate,
mm-hmm.
but not 6 to 10 like
right.
a wave would bring them. The governors would be sort of divided, and the Republicans would have less but still have a general control of the state gubernatorial residences and legislatures. So, as you pointed out, more or less a status quo with
right.
the Republicans
right.
still fairly strong, but not having but having no red wave.
Right.
right.
Well, in Texas, we had a really interesting I'd like to hear from you about some of the other primaries, but here in Texas, I thought we had a really interesting case because you remember all of the talk of a blue wave back in March that never really materialized. I mean, clearly the Democrats had more votes than they did before, but still substantially less than the Republicans. But what was dramatic was this runoff a couple of days ago where the two Democrat candidates between them had 419,000 votes. And that's the lowest figure of any Democrat runoff since 1920. 1920, when the population was obviously a lot smaller. So I just think that at least here, the Democrat Party is extremely, extremely unprepared, if you will, for the general election. And here in Texas, and I've read this in other places too, the excitement in the Democrat Party is in the left, but it's exactly the kind of left that will have a very difficult time in the general election, Barry, as you were pointing out, in Georgia and other places, Barry.
Well, the key, as always, in a general election is the independent or non-aligned or loosely aligned voters. I mean, it's hard to say, to define exactly what that non-partisan on the in the political center is, but it isn't clear how many there are, whether it's
mm-hmm.
5, 10, or 15% or 20. But whatever they are, they make the difference in virtually all, certainly all competitive elections. I mean, they don't make much difference in an election which is one-sided like we have here in Minnesota in one of our Senate races where Senator Klobuchar, a Democrat, is going to win by a very large margin. She's very popular and gets a lot of independent votes, even some Republican votes. The other race here, Minnesota, of course, is very competitive. That was the one that Al Franken resigned his seat from, and the lieutenant governor was appointed, and she is being opposed by another woman, a state senator, and that race will be close and will be decided by the independent voters.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I mean, some of my friends point out, say, whenever I've mentioned independent voters, they say, well, that's just a very tiny number of truly independent voters. Well, I don't know how true that is, but I agree their number is relatively small. But there's a whole bunch of other voters who are not independence with a capital I. They are other, some of them vote for other parties, and many of them are nominal Democrats and nominal Republicans, but really vote for the candidate and split their tickets. And there's a lot of them, and you only need 5, 10, or 15% of the voters to be that to make a huge difference in an election,
right.
And especially in an election like this one. So my sense is that these voters are very, very undecided at this point. They make up the undecided voters. I think most Democrats are going to vote for Democratic candidates, and most
mm-hmm.
Republicans are going to vote for Republican candidates. One thing that is clear is Republicans are sticking by Donald Trump, just as Democrats are pretty antithetical to Trump. Those statements, I think, are true and aren't going to change. So the whole dynamic of the election goes into that group of voters, and those are the voters, if they would go one way or the other, would produce a wave. I think that there's a good case can be made that they will, those voters will be mixed. If that's true, there will be no wave.
Mm-hmm.
And as I described it and you described it, it will be pretty much a status quo election. Now, that will be perceived, however, generally as a victory for the Republicans, in the sense that historically there are usually wave elections against the party in power. In this case, against Donald Trump and the Republican Party. That would normally be the case. It doesn't always happen, and
mm-hmm.
Didn't happen, for example, in 1998 with Bill Clinton. But it does happen generally, and of course it certainly happened in 1994, 2010, when you had huge numbers of Republican victories, and it's happened historically for Democrats in the past as well. I think it's all been all about, I think it's all generally, if you want my honest opinion,
mm-hmm.
I think it's all propaganda. Newt for a while there was talking about a red wave. Now he's been a little less sanguine, and he's
mm-hmm.
talking about the fact that there's certainly no blue wave.
Right. Well, I can add somebody else to the conversation, and that's Larry Sabato of the University of Virginia. He was on TV here in the last couple of days, and I saw the podcast. I didn't see it live. I saw the podcast, and he said that there may, just like you're saying, there may be a wave, there may not be a wave, but he said right now he didn't see any evidence of a blue wave. That he looks, you know, he's looking at numbers from everywhere. And he doesn't see any evidence of a blue wave. And I think that for so long we were hearing that it's inevitable there's going to be a blue wave. It's inevitable, that I think sometimes people come to believe that it's inevitable. But I don't see it. I mean, I look around the country, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Republicans lose 15 seats, but that they wouldn't lose the House. I think they do have a really good chance, of doing very well in the Senate. Whether they pick up 10 seats, that's probably too many. But I think they pick up 3 or 4, that puts them in a very strong position for judges and everything else that the Senate does, Barry.
Well, of course, Newt is, although he's has very acute observations,
mm-hmm.
some could say he's, you know, sort of partisan, and he does defend the president. Larry Sabato has his ups and downs. He's a very smart guy. But the guy I pay attention to, the more statistical guy, is Sean Trendy from Real
mm-hmm,
Clear
yes.
Politics. And he just wrote a piece basically also saying no blue wave. In fact, if you look at the overall evidence, there's more momentum towards the president and his party than not.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the economy, because of the unemployment situation, and because of foreign policy developments. And what I found was interesting was some of the pundits, like asked my good friend Nathan Gonzalez at Inside Politics, now expanded the list of vulnerable Republicans. At the same time, admitting, and certainly everyone agrees, that the Republican-Democratic generic vote has gone from 13 down to 3 or 2 or 1. Now, how does that happen? How does that work? How do you suddenly have all these vulnerable Republicans and the vote's going their way? So I think what's going on here is a lot of people are indulging in wish fulfillment and hoping that it's going to happen, but there's no evidence of it.
Right.
And
well, let me do this. Let's take
fact,
yeah. I was
going to
say, let me take a little break. Go ahead
okay.
and finish. Go ahead and finish that thought.
I was going to
say,
ahead
and finish
the polling, which I'm very skeptical of polling.
Sure.
But even the polling that has been most negative to the president, such as Gallup, has him up 5 or 6 points from where he was. And Rasmussen, which I feel also not necessarily accurate, but certainly more likely to be accurate than others because of their methodology, they have the president in either 49, 50, or 51, depending on the day. He's either down one or up one. And he's been there for a couple months.
Every day he's at 49, 50, or 51. And that may be, more than the others. I think the average is like 44 in that RCP average. So somewhere between 44 and 50 is probably where he's at right now. But let me take a little break, and when I come back, I want to talk about this Trump factor, because I think he's the reason, I think, that a lot of the politics has changed, his policies in particular. So we're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from my friend Carlos Geddes, and then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Barry Castleman.
This is Carlos Geddes Harpy. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information. Click on that, and it'll take you to that website with all of the local schedule. Let's get back to our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. Barry, I was going to say one thing before I bring up the point of Donald Trump, that when you look at some of the voting in some of these primaries, and I'm not even talking about Texas, I'm talking about Ohio. In Ohio, for example, there were two very competitive primaries, GOP and Democrat. And the Republican turnout was significantly better. In other states, I've seen numbers that show that the Republicans are very much in the game. They're certainly not staying home. So that's why I feel more optimistic about the Republicans in 2018. It's not so much the polling data. It's the fact that when people actually vote, the Republicans are not staying home, Barry.
Right. And also, as I keep pointing out again and again and again, May, June, April, May, and June are not November.
That's right.
We have to look at what will the economic and unemployment and international scenes be like?
Mm-hmm.
Where will the public be? How will they be feeling? Will they be feeling? Will the stock market be up and their net worth up and unemployment low, and they're getting better and better jobs, and minority groups such as blacks and Hispanics are getting jobs finally, and the world situation will have seemed a little more stable than it's been. If that's true, you might even have a red wave.
Right.
If it's not, then the blue wave will happen. And
right.
there will be wholesale defeats of Republicans across the board. So, or it may be a mixture, in which case we'll have neither a blue or red wave, a standoff, which is kind of where I'm leaning right now.
Right. You're saying that the leadership doesn't change, control doesn't change, the numbers may move one way or the other, but the control doesn't change. Now, some governorships, as you indicated, will change, and that's because governorships are different than Senate seats. I mean, in the sense that they have to govern, they got to get things done, and anybody who governs is going to make people unhappy. That's just the nature of the game. So, and the Republicans also had too many governors. They had like 35 governors. They were bound to lose some.
Right.
So that, I think, is
also
just,
elections for governor and for legislature are local, as are
right, exactly.
Often, sometimes even House seats can be very localized. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
there can be part of a wave, but in normal elections, they are local elections, depending on the personality of the incumbent, or if there's an open seat, the political makeup of the district. So there's a very interesting case of it goes both ways, and that's the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
California has a very unusual rule. Only one other state does that. In the primary elections, only the top two candidates, regardless of party, get to be on the November ballot. That's all. No independents, nothing. Just the two top candidates. So that is created. That was created, mostly, I believe, by Democrats because they felt that they could, in many cases, have the top two candidates be Democrats and the Republicans would be shut out. Now, what's happened in California this time is they got so many Democrats running for House seats that there's a couple of, there's about four different races where the possibility, very distinct possibility exists, that the top two candidates will be Republicans. And those are seats the Democrats were expected to pick up, and they might not even be in the race in November. But the reverse is true in the governor's race, where the mayor of San Francisco is way out in front, and the mayor, I think, of Los Angeles, or certainly another guy, another Democrat, is in second place. And third place is Mr. Cox, the Republican. And they may get shut out. And, of course, that's very serious because if you don't have a candidate for governor, your turnout will be lower. And that could affect all the other races in the state.
Right.
So and President Trump has endorsed Mr. Cox.
Yes.
So to make sure that he survives. So that's a very, I mean, so there's this complexity, and you mentioned mm-hmm. Ohio and Michigan and all these races, and we, here in Minnesota, you know, we certainly have so many interesting races that will be, whose outcome will depend on local conditions as well as national conditions. So, you know, we discuss this every time you and I get on the air together. And so many others are discussing, there is this, it's a very recent phenomenon, relatively recent phenomenon. American media folks and many, many citizens are just so eager to know the future before
right.
it happens.
Yeah.
And they want to have all these predictions. You know, I specialize in political predictions, and I've had my share of both good predictions and a couple of bad ones. But And I have a reputation for that. But I've been working against my own reputation in this cycle. I've been resisting making predictions because I realize how unlikely and how volatile the political scene is, and so much can change it overnight.
Right.
And
and the voters, Barry, I think I'm beginning to – I take polls – you know, I look at them. I don't go crazy over them. I look at them and I give them, you know, whatever. You know, I don't go crazy over them. I don't make. I don't think they tell you that much because there's so many problems polling people these days. I don't know how in the world you can even get a good sample these days because of all the problems they have with telephones calling people. But I tend to look at the voters. I tend to look at what voters are doing. And the message that I take out of all of these primaries, not just Texas, but as I said before, in some of the other states, is that Republicans are showing up to vote. They, you know, the Democrats may be very motivated to vote, and that's fine. But at least in Ohio, which is a big state where they're going to have a Senate race this fall. The Republicans turned out quite well. I think in California, Barry, you probably know this, but in California, the Republican base is extremely energized. Even though it's a smaller base, it will turn out to vote. It will turn out to vote. And I think that if you have a contest between, let's say, Mr. Cox and the mayor of San Francisco, Newsom, I think is his name,
yes,
that may turn out to be a little closer than one would expect, because there's a lot of lots and lots of anger in California in the Republican base. Sanctuary cities issue has really blown up in the face of Governor Brown. There's a lot of dissatisfaction in California with a lot of things, you know, like the cost of living and lots of other things, you know, what's happening in the cities. So I wouldn't be surprised if California this year, I'm not saying they're going to turn red, I don't mean that, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Republicans do a heck of a lot better than they've done in several cycles, Barry.
Well, it could be. I just think that there's a lot of contrary factors at play,
mm-hmm,
here that will tend to make the turnout and the results a little more mixed than we would think. I mean, you know, based on the 2016 presidential election,
mm-hmm,
places like California and New York and Illinois were overwhelmingly Democratic, overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. And you would expect, and yet all those states have Republican congressmen, and in a case of Illinois, a Republican governor who's running for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have so many contrary factors at play in this very unusual cycle. And as you pointed out at the beginning of this segment, it really all goes back to Donald Trump.
Right, and that's what I want to get into now, because thank you for bringing that up, because I really think he is the person who's turned this around. I think that 3 or 4 months ago, he was not doing as well as he is now, but clearly the voters are giving him credit for the economy. He is running the country. I mean, he is all in. He, you know, goes to work every day, as they say. He's all in. And I think he's the reason that he's looking better. I mean, I really do. I think he's the reason that the Republicans are looking better, Barry.
Well, I don't think there's any question. And I think I'm certainly one of the persons who initially underestimated him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Many people still underestimate him. It's a huge mistake. He's the master of the media and communication, even though most of the media is hostile. He manipulates them, and they do it willingly. I mean, one of the things that is happening is some of the savvier Democrats, both in office and those who are strategists, are sending up alarm bells,
mm-hmm,
saying, "Wait a minute, we're helping,
right?
We're not hurting him," and all this stuff. I mean, and the whole the Mueller thing has gone on much, much too long, with almost,
mm-hmm,
no results so far, all innuendo, rumor, and,
mm-hmm,
and circumstantial things that have no hard evidence. At some point, he's going to have to come to a conclusion here.
Right. Exactly.
And the what's clear, all the polls are showing that he is no longer enjoying being his efforts are no longer favorable to the majority of the country, and that's a very dangerous thing for him, because he depends a lot on public opinion, not on his on the facts, but on his ability to continue doing what he's doing. The president is making, I mean, even with Korea, you know, there was a lot of optimism when looked like there was going to be a summit, and then the president himself canceled it. I think a lot of people were cheering him for doing that, because it was clear that the guy in Korea was playing games. And rather than, as someone pointed out, rather than be Charlie Brown, is it Charlie Brown in the Peanuts call? Who always
yes,
holds the football?
Where Lucy takes the football away, yes.
Lucy
yes,
takes
that's
the football
classic
away. He's supposed to kick it. And he said, he's no Charlie Brown.
That's it. No, I thought it was brilliant.
I thought that was so apt because he's just showing that he's a smarter player than Kim. And the same thing is true in the Middle East. The move to Jerusalem was thought to be a disaster in the making. It's not a disaster.
No.
In fact, now several South American countries are moving their capital, moving mm-hmm. their embassies to Jerusalem, and Israel is in a stronger position, mainly because the president has reasserted American alliance with Israel, and with the newly formed sort of unofficial coalition of Israel with Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Jordan and the Gulf states against Iran. And the Europeans are missing the boat. I think one of the interesting things was the visit of President Macron of France, who doesn't agree with Donald Trump on a number of major issues, but who understood that the president was really sort of the energy center of foreign policy in the world. He had reasserted American standing. He had reversed completely the hands-off policy of Barack Obama, and he said, "We're a player here,
right.
And if you're going to use biological weapons, we're going to send our planes over." He's so far been very careful about involving new troops, which I think would be unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
He has been very interestingly has handled the trade questions, NAFTA, TPP, China. He's initially his moves were considered reckless and wrongheaded. It turns out that the deal maker knew what he was doing, and
right.
the other sides are actually starting to realize that they have to play ball, they have to make concessions, or because we have the upper hand for now.
Right.
And
well, I think there's a couple of things going on, Barry, and I just think that nothing, as the old expression, you know, nothing works like success. That you know when you're successful, it just helps you. It helps you in many ways, and I think that's what's happening here. When you have a good economy and people feel better, that's going to pay dividends to the president. But I'll say one last thing about Donald Trump. He's also very lucky in some of the enemies that he has, because in the case of the Democrats, I mean, look, the National Democrat Party is behaving. They've lost their heads in so many ways. And it's got to be very frustrating for all those Democrats in the middle of the country who are trying to win in more competitive or rural elections. It's got to be very frustrating for them when they watch the Democratic Party, like Keith Emerson, or is it Ellerson, the fellow from Minnesota, who shows up at a campaign or some kind of a state convention with a T-shirt that says, "I don't believe in borders." Well, that's not going to play real well in most parts of the country. So I think Trump is also lucky because of his enemies, that I think the Democrats are, and I was watching another analyst say this, that the country is getting a little bit afraid of the Democrats, and that's helping the Republicans, Barry.
Well, I mean, the Democrats are the left wing, the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Maxine Waters wing is asserting they want to have single-payer health care, which, although it sounds good, doesn't work anywhere, and would be even worse than Obamacare. They are still insisting on political correctness, which the president has very effectively stalemated.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there are still many areas, but as you point out, there are a lot of Democrats. In the liberal Democrats who are mainstream liberal Democrats, and who have, you know, you and I have, at least I've made the point that we want a good, strong Democratic Party
an
opposition party, because that's how our system works. We don't want one party being too strong.
Yeah.
And so we want the Democrats to have some, to come up with some good ideas and win some races.
Right.
We don't necessarily agree about any individual race, but we want the Democrats to do well. But as is happening in Great Britain, the Labour Party, the main opposition party, has gone way off on the left and has even become, at least through its leadership, perceived as anti-Semitic.
Uh-huh.
It's just not the way it's not going to work in Great Britain.
No.
And that's revived. Frankly, the Conservative Party and Mrs. May have not been terribly impressive recently, but they're enabling them to win. Same thing is happening here. But to be fair, some Republican, I mean, there's, for example, a battle going on in the U.S. House. Speaker Ryan, who's a lame duck, is finding within his own caucus, a lot of opposition blocking legislation and compromises that they have made. And that's not being perceived well by voters either, to be very honest with you.
Mm-hmm, sure.
If you're in control, as the Republicans are of the House by a substantial margin, and you can't do things, then you're making it very, very attractive to voters to vote you out. Now, in the Senate, it's 51-49, so everybody understands it's very close.
Right.
And you've got a couple of mavericks like Rand Paul and
John McCain.
John McCain. And others who are not being loyal senators to the leadership. Now there's always sometimes good reason for that, but sometimes it's more personal than it is good policy. And that when that happens, when that kind of division happens in a party, you're going to create you're not going to create a lot of goodwill. So the Republicans have their own problems.
They do, and I hear it all the time down here, Barry. I mean, you know, you listen to talk radio to talk radio here in Texas, and it's a more conservative talk radio market, of course. And you hear this all the time, people calling in saying these Republicans don't do anything. Now, I don't agree with that. I think they do have done actually quite a few things, like the tax bill, and I think the effort to eliminate the mandatory Obamacare provision. I mean, I think they have done things, but people expected them to do more, and to some degree I did too. I expected them to be better organized. But the one thing they've got going for them right now, the Republicans, two things they have going for them. Number one, the Democrats are sounding so irrational, and President Trump is just is more and more successful in what he's doing. And that's why I think here we are, Memorial Day. It's too early. We don't want to make predictions. But I would have to say things are looking better for the Republicans at this point. And we'll see where they are on Labor Day. But at least right now, I think the Republicans are in a pretty good position, Barry.
Well, and what's interesting, going on a little more about President Trump, you know, he was originally a Democrat. He certainly had no standing in the Republican Party until he got the nomination. And he's turning out to be the unifier of the party. And as I pointed out in West Virginia and in other races, he is intervening on behalf of the party's likely winners. He is not fueling the opposition or the division or the divisive forces. He's acting as a unifier to make the party stronger, and that's not lost on the party leadership. They're you know, there was whatever hostility there was initially is diminished a great deal because the president has shown himself to be a very interesting figure. You saw that he pardoned Jack Johnson, the famous black heavyweight champion who was unfairly imprisoned and so many, almost 100 years ago. He does things that should have been done by President Obama.
That would have been you're right. That would have been the perfect person to do it. Even Jerusalem. I mean, Jerusalem, putting the embassy in Jerusalem would have been a big boost for President Obama to, you know, develop
better
relations.
Or even President George W. Bush.
Yeah. I agree. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. He's doing things that a lot of other people promised to do and didn't do. As you know, I did not start out as a Trump supporter. We talked about this a couple of years ago when we were doing the analysis of the primaries and all of that. I was not a fan of his, but he won. And so far, he's turned out to be, for my money, a pretty conservative president. I mean, Gorsuch in the Supreme Court, some of the judges he's appointing. That doesn't get a lot of news, but those judges are going to have a huge impact on
politics. And by
politics.
The way,
yes.
There's an interest. One final thing.
Sure.
So Majority Leader McConnell has put the Democrats on notice. You know, mm-hmm. August, September, and October are supposed to be the months when there's the House and the Senate go home to campaign.
Right.
And McConnell says, and the Senate races are really key to the Democrats winning. And as I pointed out here in Minnesota, the appointed Democratic Senator Tina Smith is not well known in the state, and she must campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But if she's not allowed to come home, because she also can't miss votes.
Right.
If she does miss votes, she will definitely lose the election. They're put between a rock and a hard, so-called rock and a hard place. The Democrats either have to confirm the presidential appointments, or he will keep them. And they're the ones who are demanding, you know, even though there's no longer a filibuster, the Senate rules enable for each individual confirmation 30 hours of debate. And that's what they've been doing. That's what they've been using that as a delaying tactic. Well, that can work against them, because if they're going to insist on that, they're going to be in Washington August, September, and October. They won't ever be able to come home.
That's right, and campaign. No, you're right. And I've been very critical of the Democrats and how they've treated President Trump, playing all these kinds of delay games. And even with this amazing lady, Gina Haspel, I mean, people can disagree with the lady, but she was very qualified. And she was put through, I think, the same with Secretary Pompeo. They were put through extremely partisan confirmations. That, in my opinion, that was never the intent of having these confirmations. Barry, we're going to have to wrap it up, though, but I do want to thank you, as always, so much for joining us. We're going to do this again in the next 30 days or so and take stock of where we are in the middle of the summer. And keep up the great work at the Prairie Editor. You know, as you know, I read it and I share it with people all the time. One of my sons is also a subscriber. And we love what you do. And it's always fun for me to get your email alerting me that there's a new post. So keep up the great work.
Thank you, and I always enjoy your program.
Thank you very much, and best of luck to the Yankees. It's a long season, but they're doing very well right now. They're like Donald Trump. They're doing very well. It's a long season, but they're doing well.
Well, let's hope so. Thank you.
Let's hope so. Thank you very much. Barry Castleman, our great friend, the Prairie Editor. You know, it's fascinating to talk to Barry because he's got a great sense of what's going on. And I like what he's saying. He's saying, look, maybe there's not going to be a red wave. There's not going to be a blue wave. It's just going to be kind of a status quo. Maybe a few seats going one way or the other, but no change in leadership. I think that's probably what's going to happen, to be honest with you. Have a great weekend, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.